This course has been compiled for the purpose of helping the student find out what are his or her natural talents, and for the purpose of helping organize, coordinate, and put into use the knowledge gained from experience. For more than 20 years, I have been gathering, classifying, and organizing the material that has gone into the course. During the past 14 years, I have analyzed more than 16,000 men and women, and all of the vital facts gathered from these analyses have been carefully organized and woven into this course. These analyses brought out many interesting facts which have helped to make this course practical and usable. For example, it was discovered that 95% of all who were analyzed were failures, but 5% were successes. By the term failure is meant that they had failed to find happiness and the ordinary necessities of life without struggle that was almost unbearable. Perhaps this is about the proportion of successes and failures that might be found if all the people of the world were accurately analyzed. The struggle for a mere existence is terrific among people who have not learned how to organize and direct their natural talents, while the attainment of those necessities, as well as the acquiring of many of the luxuries, is comparatively simple among those who have mastered the principle of organized effort. One of the most startling facts brought to light by those 16,000 analyses was the discovery that the 95% who were classed as failures were in that class because they had no definite chief aim in life, while the 5% constituting the successful ones not only had purposes that were definite, but they had also definite plans for the attainment of their purposes. Another important fact disclosed by these analyses was that the 95% constituting the failures were engaged in work which they did not like, while the 5% constituting the successful ones were doing that which they liked best. It is doubtful whether a person could be a failure while engaged in work which he liked best. Another vital fact learned from the analyses was that all of the 5% who were succeeding had formed the habit of systematic saving of money, while the 95% who were failures saved nothing. This is worthy of serious thought. One of the chief objects of this course is to aid the student in performing his or her chosen work in such a manner that it will yield the greatest returns in both money and happiness. A definite chief aim. The keynote of this entire lesson may be found in the word definite. It is most appalling to know that 95% of the people of the world are drifting aimlessly through life, without the slightest conception of the work for which they are best fitted, and with no conception whatsoever of even the need of such a thing as a definite objective toward which to strive. There is a psychological as well as an economic reason for the selection of a definite chief aim in life. Let us devote our attention to the psychological side of the question first. It is a well-established principle of psychology that a person's acts are always in harmony with the dominating thoughts of his or her mind. Any definite chief aim that is deliberately fixed in the mind and held there with the determination to realize it finally saturates the entire subconscious mind until it automatically influences the physical action of the body toward the attainment of that purpose. Your definite chief aim in life should be selected with deliberate care, and after it has been selected, it should be written out and placed where you will see it at least once a day, the psychological effect of which is to impress this purpose upon your subconscious mind so strongly that it accepts that purpose as a pattern or blueprint that will eventually dominate your activities in life and lead you, step by step, toward the attainment of the object back of that purpose. The principle of psychology through which you can impress your definite chief aim upon your subconscious mind is called autosuggestion, or suggestion, which you repeatedly make to yourself. It is a degree of self-hypnotism, but do not be afraid of it on that account. For it was this same principle, through the aid of which Napoleon lifted himself from the lowly station of poverty-stricken Corsican to the dictatorship of France. It was through the aid of this same principle that Thomas A. Edison has risen from the lowly beginning of a news butcher to where he is accepted as the leading inventor of the world. It was through the aid of this same principle that Lincoln bridged the mighty chasm between his lowly birth in a log cabin in the mountains of Kentucky and the presidency of the greatest nation on earth. It was through the aid of this same principle that Theodore Roosevelt became one of the most aggressive leaders that ever reached the presidency of the United States. You need have no fear of the principle of autosuggestion, as long as you are sure that the objective for which you are striving is one that will bring you happiness of an enduring nature. Be sure that your definite purpose is constructive, that its attainment will bring hardship and misery to no one, that it will bring you peace and prosperity. Then apply to the limit of your understanding the principle of self-suggestion for the speedy attainment of this purpose. On the street corner, just opposite the room in which I am writing, I see a man who stands there all day long and sells peanuts. He is busy every minute. When not actually engaged in making a sale, he is roasting and packing the peanuts in little bags. He is one of that great army constituting the 95% who have no definite purpose in life. He is selling peanuts not because he likes that work better than anything else he might do, but because he never sat down and thought out a definite purpose that would bring him greater returns for his labor. He is selling peanuts because he is a drifter on the sea of life. And one of the tragedies of his work is the fact that the same amount of effort that he puts into it, if directed along other lines, would bring him much greater returns.